Well, good morning again. 10 minutes after 5 o'clock on this Saturday morning, and the temperature outside my studios in Huntley, Illinois, 64 degrees, no precipitation as the dry weather continues. But Orion Samuelson with you until 6 o'clock. A lot to talk about this morning because when I turn on my writer machine, it's always interesting to see what kind of headlines we'll find. Headlines around the world besides the COVID-19 this morning. Antarctic air reaching Australia's southeast triggered snowfall down to low altitudes across several states today. Many people out enjoying the rare event despite wild winds and heavy snows that closed some roads. But pictures of snowy towns and landscapes across New South Wales, Victoria, the Australian Capital Territory, and the island state of Tasmania flooded social media as locals rushed out to capture the surprise early spring snowfall. For those of you that have forgotten your geography lessons at this time of the year, it's winter in the southern hemisphere as we're getting ready to welcome winter here. But this one in Australia, very unusual. And then, of course, in California, some of the worst wildfires in a long time. The state has been hit by its worst dry lightning storms in nearly two decades. Close to 12,000 lightning strikes have sent flames racing through towns and rural communities in California. And they are having a real problem in controlling those fires. And then, of course, we've got COVID-19. The death count globally continues to rise. So, yeah, we've got enough to look at and to talk about here on this Saturday morning. And if you're planning on looking in on the virtual farm progress show this year, stay with us because Max Armstrong is going to talk first of all about the damage of the windstorm, the derecho that we experienced a couple of weeks ago. But then he'll also talk about the virtual farm progress show and where you will find that, because you will be able to go to the farm progress show virtually, because it'll not happen in reality this year. So a lot to talk about, and you know who is with us yet on Saturday morning, because we still have a gardening season to go, Jim Fazell, and we'll be checking with Jim for his gardening advice when we continue on the Saturday morning show. It's that time of year when we continue to harvest this year's crop in the garden, but we also start planting for next year's crop in the garden. So let's find out what we do first. Jim Fazell, good morning.
Good morning, Orion. Yes, you know, the garden season doesn't stop. In fact, farming season doesn't stop either. These guys that are picking corn, or will be picking corn pretty quick, when they get the last bin in the bushel in the bin, that doesn't mean they're done for the year. They've got next year to plan for, and it just keeps going, which means that we never have a pause as far as getting things done, but we never get bored because there's always something ahead. It's great.
Never a dull moment, but I see you're having trouble with squirrels eating your tomatoes.
Yes, that's a fact. You know, we've had one of the best tomato crops we've had in a long time. I'm not sure why. It just happened. It's varieties that we've grown before. But we've got a terrific crop of not just the little grape tomatoes, but big slicing tomatoes. And it's strange that squirrels, they must sit and watch. And as soon as one starts to turn red, they get out there, they yank that thing off, and they take a couple of bites out of it and leave it because they really don't like to eat those things. Well, we had maybe a dozen of them that were picked off. I finally said, enough. And I got my squirrel trap out, and I began relocating. I relocated, too, and then there was no more biting of tomatoes. So I guess we're in the clear for now. We give these things another place where they can live, where there are plenty of trees and so forth. And this is early enough in the year that the squirrels can make a nest if they want to, or find a nest that they can live in, so it's no damage to them. But they stop eating my tomatoes, and that's what I'm trying to do. But you mentioned it's planting time. You know, when it's planting time in the garden, a lot of times that's when we divide things. And this is a terrific time to begin dividing some of the plants. It's better to do it now than in the spring on many of these, because it gives them a chance to develop a good root system before the growing season starts. Because as long as the ground is thawed, and before it gets down too close to freezing temperature, these plants continue to make roots down there, where they'll have roots that will be available next spring to push up nice plants, and it will show up in the flowering in the next year's bloom. If you transplant these things in spring, a lot of times they fail to bloom or bloom very poorly. Before I talk about a couple of these varieties, one thing I want to emphasize is the importance of labeling. Now, the daylilies and the iris and the spring bulbs are done flowering, so if you did not label these, you're going to go out and say, where was that red daylily that I wanted to move? Well, if you have your labels down, you don't have to ask. The other thing you might do, in case the labels do get moved or removed, squirrels can do that too, make a map and show what is where in your garden. This will be accurate if the labels go out, especially if most of the labels are there. You can say, oh, yeah, this one with no label is that red that I was looking for. Okay, let's talk about some of these things that need to be divided now. The first one I think of is iris. It's been growing along very nicely now since the blooms left. It's getting late in the season. Some of them begin to yellow up a little bit. Time to dig these clumps up and divide them. Actually, you can divide them by just cutting the clump in half. That will work, and you've got a nice big plant on either side of that. If you're going to do it the traditional way, is you take a fan and you cut it off, make sure it's cleaned up. Each one of these fans will make a new plant. If you want a lot of plants, that's the way to do it. Also, while you're digging these things up, you may notice that some of these rhizomes underneath these things have rotted away. That's not just rot. That's the result of the iris borers. And if you look carefully enough in that mess that you've got in there, you're probably going to find a little pink caterpillar. Actually, this is a grub that is the larva of the borer. That's the borer itself. You need to cut those out. Put them in a garbage bag. Don't put them in the recycler. Put them in the garbage and get rid of these things. Clean the rhizomes up. Take all the stuff off of them that's been decayed, and replant these. They should bloom very nicely if you have big enough clumps. Daylilies, same way. You dig them up, begin to separate them. Now, they don't really have fans, but they do have groups of leaves that come out of an individual place. You can divide each one of these so that you have a clump of leaves, or you can divide the clump in half. And that's what I've been doing lately, because I want them to be big and fill in very quickly. This is the time to do that. If you've labeled them, you know which ones are where. The next one that you need to divide at this time of year is the spring bulbs, the daffodils, the tulips, and so forth. Dig these clumps up that you've labeled so you know where they are. Dig them up, divide the individual bulbs out, plant them again back in the ground just like you did when you put them in originally. Space them out properly so that they have plenty of room to grow until it's time to divide them again, which should be 4 or 5 years later. Now, there are other early blooming perennials. These would be spring and summer blooming things. I call them the stemmy kinds. They don't have clumps. They do have clumps, but they don't have fans of leaves. They have a lot of stems coming out. Things like coreopsis or salvia, garden phlox, maybe the real geranium, not the horticultural geranium, but the purple flower geranium. These clumps can be cut into half or into sections, replanted. You have more of them than you started with, so you have plenty to spread out. But this needs to be done now as well. Now, one other thing that I want to mention is that we're going into a really dry spell, it seems. In fact, our good friend Greg Solier has said that we can't even expect any rains to begin for another about 3 weeks. And then he's saying it's going to be seasonal at best, which doesn't mean we're going to get a lot of relief from this semi-drought that we have right now. You need to water these things in thoroughly so that they do begin to make roots, and continue to water them if we do get dry weather, because there's no other place that they're going to get water if you don't provide it, unless we do get some good soaking rains. And with the soil as dry as it is right now, even soaking a plant individually in, if the roots begin to grow, they're going to encounter some fairly dry soil in the vicinity. Okay, one other thing I want to mention right now, and I get calls about this a lot of times, is when do we plant garlic? A lot of people have started to grow things like that in their garden because they're staying home now, doing more home cooking, and they want some of these spicy things. Well, garlic is one that you don't plant in the spring. You plant it now. The reason for that being, it needs to have a big mass of leaves by the time it begins to bulb up, and that will be in late summer, in late spring. So you want to plant it now. It'll begin growing right away. You want to protect the leaves as long as you can until they freeze up. They're probably going to exist over the winter, and they may even survive over winter if we have good snow cover. In spring, they're going to be growing again, so you'll have a good big plant when it's time to make the bulbs. And when it begins to die down at time of harvest, you can dig this up and be glad that you planted it in spring. Other things going on in the garden, keep picking the tomatoes. I mentioned before the squirrels. One thing you can do if you don't want to trap these little critters, pick the tomatoes and squash as well. They'll work on that before they get red. In fact, I'm picking them when they're what I call ripe white. That means they're white colored, they're just beginning to turn pink. Pick them off, put them in a cool, dark place. I put them on a bench in the basement, and they will ripen up in about a week and so forth, and you'll have good, homegrown, not quite ripe picked, but green picked, good, homegrown tomatoes. Nothing like them. One other thing about watering, you know, if you're growing tomatoes and you allow those plants to get really dry, when you do water them, the fruit, which has already put a good, healthy skin around the tomato plant, that skin may be so strong that when you water them and they begin to take up water and swell, they're going to crack. So try to keep the watering up on your tomatoes so that they stay reasonably moist. One other thing I just wanted to mention, weed control as we getting rid of things in the garden. If you're emptying a garden that's been growing annuals, you can use our good friend glyphosate on everything, kill off the perennial grasses, the broadleaf weeds and so forth. You don't want to use that on the perennial beds unless the plants have been cut all the way down, because glyphosate is absorbed by the green part of the plant. Now, you can use that when the perennials are cut all the way down, but probably better, get the garden hoe out, or in the spring, there are several pre-emergent herbicides that can be used, and they all work very well, keeping the weeds from growing, as long as the perennial weeds are not growing. Perennial weeds are not killed by these pre-emergent materials, because what it says is pre-emerge, before the seeds come up. So that's about it for today. That's plenty to get people started. Enjoy this hot weather. I don't know how much longer it's going to last, but every day is a blessing. Helps things grow and keeps us active outdoors. Enjoy it. It's a great time of year.
It really is. And let me give you a report on the tomatoes that Gloria raises on our patio in the backyard here in Huntley, because we do not have a large home or a large yard, but I told her years ago when she started on this to get a deep pot, because tomato plants like room to grow roots. And boy, she's harvested several dozen cherry tomatoes off her one pot of a tomato plant this year, so she's doing well.
Good. Well, she has to sit there on her back patio and survey her holdings out there while her crops grow. That's wonderful.
Yes, indeed. So you have a good week and enjoy the weather. And if we get a little rain, I'll send some of it your way, okay?
Appreciate it, Orion. Thanks.
All right, Jim Fazell. He's our specialist in ornamental horticulture who shares his 4-5 decades of expertise in growing things, and so he'll be with us next week here on the Saturday Morning Show. It is 63 degrees on my thermometer here in Huntley, Illinois. Oh, and before I do anything else, we made our Friday night visit to the folks at my favorite restaurant, Jameson's in Huntley. And several people were there, and we were dining outdoors on the patio. And thanks to those of you who came up to say hello, and thanks for joining one of our favorite restaurant sponsors here on WGN Radio, the folks at Jameson's. And, of course, they're located in several communities in the Chicagoland area, but we always go to the one which is about a couple miles away from where we live in Huntley, in Sun City, Huntley, Illinois. 28 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday morning show, and we always appreciate your company with us here throughout the week with our market reports and comments on agriculture, and particularly here on Saturday morning when we have a little more time than we do with our daily market reports. The headlines that I shared at the beginning of the show show the variety of weather that we have around the world. And a pair of tropical cyclones forecast to become hurricanes early next week, headed for the U.S. Gulf Coast, and will spin over the Gulf's warm waters simultaneously. And that's a rare weather event that could cause some massive disruption as they make landfall down around the Gulf of Mexico. There have never been two hurricanes in the U.S. Gulf of Mexico at the same time. That's according to the National Hurricane Center. The closest event was in 1933 when a major hurricane made landfall in South Texas, while a separate hurricane weakened to a tropical storm after crossing the Florida Peninsula, according to the National Hurricane Center. So the unusual things we're experiencing in 2020 continues with weather and with COVID-19 and with snowfall in Australia. Quite an unusual situation. And I might have time to talk a little more about hurricanes when they hit the Gulf of Mexico and what they can do to crops here in the Midwest, as they very often make their move up into the U.S. Following the Mississippi River, and that brings rain and winds and other weather activities here into the Midwest. But time now here on WGN Radio Chicago for Samuelson Says. I'm Orion, and it's time to talk about one of my favorite vegetables, and I don't have many of them, but I do enjoy sweet corn, so we'll share some thoughts with you on that when we continue on Samuelson Says.
Save big money on your next project with 11% off everything right now at Menards. Light your outdoor spaces with a 2,000 lumen dual head floodlight from Fight Electric with a dusk to dawn sensor. Pick one up for $22.22 after 11% off. Start saving today with 11% off everything. Prices are good until August 22nd. Savings are a mail-in rebate. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Save big money at Menards.
Since I'm not able to do what I would normally do during the summer months because of the COVID-19 situation, and without it, I'd normally be going to county or state fairs or outdoor agricultural events, but since I can't, this week on Samuelson Says, I'm going to pretend I am a teacher. This is in response to those of you who have asked why sweet corn is sweeter than field corn. I give that credit to plant breeders, and I'm not one of them, but they have been able to put a sweeter gene into the corn stalk of sweet corn. And there are some other interesting facts about the corn plant that you can share at dinner tonight. First of all, it is a self-pollinating plant. There is pollen in the tassel at the top of the plant. The wind sprinkles the pollen loose. It's caught halfway down the stalk by silks on the forming ear, and you get an ear of corn. And there is generally 16 to 18 rows of corn kernels per ear. An ear of corn will produce generally about 800 kernels. Another interesting fact, all ears of corn have even numbers of rows. And if they turn out to be sweet corn rows, that is really good. But of course, that plant is subject to weather, like all plants, particularly the wind to shake the pollen loose, and then rain to bring the moisture to the plant to develop the ears. And you, if you're a producer, hope you don't get storms like we did a couple of weeks ago. But it's a fascinating plant, and it's one that I enjoy the year round. But as a kid growing up on the farm, we didn't grow sweet corn. We just grew field corn, and we'd slip out into the cornfield and cut an ear off the field corn. And it wasn't as sweet, but it was really good. Mother Nature does interesting things that plant breeders are able to develop even more, so you and I can enjoy sweet corn. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of Nexstar Media Group, and there's more to come here on the Saturday Morning Show. And we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show, and let's get a quick review of the market activity in the agricultural trade this week as we say good morning to Mike Pearson.
Dale Durkles from Grain Cycles is joining us. And Dale, we're almost 2 weeks past the derecho that ripped through corn and soybean country in central Iowa and Illinois. As you look at the pictures that are being shared, has this derecho caused you to make any big adjustments to your balance sheets, particularly on the corn side?
You know, the soybeans, it hasn't so much because we really don't know, and we don't deal with the physical stature of soybeans like we do with corn. They'll be tangled, but really we won't have the bushel losses. Corn's really kind of a difficult one to answer at this particular moment, simply because how much of it was broken over and how much of it was purely bent over, and that has different implications as far as yield. Two fellows I know that have got wizened history at looking at these things here. One of them used to be the commodity analyst for Conagra. Another one, the commodity director at Iowa Farm Bureau, both traveled through the derecho area in Iowa. They were thinking 100 to maybe at most 250 million bushel. And I think that's probably about as fair of an assessment as I can make.
So how does that impact pricing as we get close to harvest?
Well, you know what it is, it's going to take some bushels off the bottom line. Some people will want to argue or dispute or look at the different impacts on the balance sheet itself at this particular juncture. But as I see it, you know, those bushels will probably pretty much come off. They really won't have much impact on the demand side of the mix at this point. The other thing I think we've got to deal with at this particular juncture in time is really the impact of the Pro Farmer Tour that went through the Midwest this last week and some of the things I've heard about that.
Well, fill us in a little bit. What have you heard?
Well, the most notable thing that I've been picking up, and we haven't seen complete results just yet at this point for Iowa and Minnesota, but the one thing that's notable is that corn ear populations are running anywhere from 2% to maybe as much as 6% down from 2018. And the reason I look at 2018 is last year, 2019, as we all know, was such a convoluted year. You really can't use it for any kind of a benchmark to measure from. But if we go back to 2018, it does. And you know, if you just take the numbers per se and you put a record ear weight on top of it, or right at what the record ear weight is for the U.S., you know, you're saying that, wow, corn bushels could be as much as 5 bushels high in the USDA forecast at this point in time. And that's really huge. And that doesn't even account for the impact of the derecho and the bushels lost there in the state of Iowa.
So there definitely could be some volatility ahead as prices work to react to these numbers, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think so. You know, in September, the USDA gives us their first peek at what the data is that they collect in the field. They stopped doing that in August itself. But I think it's going to be a learning process going through the series of USDA reports. But certainly by the time we get to the October report itself, I think we're going to have a reasonable handle on what's out there, considering the maturity of the crop in most places today.
We're getting into August. Forecast looks favorable but dry in places. How is the trade interpreting all of these factors in the bean market right now?
Well, one thing I'm interestingly seeing off the Pro Farmer Tour, even bean pod counts are down a little bit from what we were back in 2017-2018, so that's something to kind of keep note. But with beans themselves, you know, and now coming along having this dryish forecast at the end, you really kind of wonder how much moisture and how much ability is the plant going to have to put dry matter into the seed itself. But along with, and even though it is a little bit dry across a lot of places in the Midwest, Iowa being in an expanding drought, interestingly enough, you know, I think maybe just as critical are the temperatures, and we really aren't finding any extremes in sort of temperatures, so we aren't putting a lot of stress on the plant in that perspective, and I think that does help on a lot at this particular juncture in time, not really stressing that plant itself. So, you know, I think yields could come down a little bit. They started high. I think everybody had been doing windshield surveys, and that was some hard data. You know, I think they're going to look at things maybe a little differently. So we'll have to see where the USDA comes up in September, but I wouldn't be surprised if it isn't down just a smidgen.
Now, all that being said, we do have new crop bean prices hugging that $9 mark. Is this a time for producers to be making some sales?
You know, if you got old crop, you got to do something, because here you are staring at the end of the quote-unquote marketing year, you know, and you get re-upped, especially if they're in commercial storage. If you have in a home, you want to get prepared for new crop harvest on top of it. But I think the one thing when I look at new crop at this point, you know, when you look at the bean export sales totals we've had, you know, we're up there running a pace of sales at this particular juncture in time we haven't seen since 2013, 2012. So, you know, we've got a lot of new crop beans on the books. We know China's got a lot of new beans on the books. And, you know, it really sets up the game that we're going to have again, you know, something before or pre-trade war, strong fall export campaign. So that's going to help put a base underneath the market itself. And the other thing is we've still got a great crush situation going for us. Somewhere along the way, processors are going to have to take some downtime, you know, start to gear up for new crop. But that crush pace doesn't seem like it's going to be going away either. So the whole demand base underneath the beans as we move on into the fall looks to be strong. So even if we get a short-term dip right in the crunch of harvest or something, it probably isn't going to last long. I'm not saying I'm a big bull to the upside because of the carryout we're dealing with, but I think in the short term, we don't have a lot of downside risk either.
All right, Dale Dirkholz of Grain Cycles.
14 minutes before 6 o'clock news time here on WGN Radio. And, you know, over the years on WGN, Max and I have had the opportunity to interview literally thousands of people in the time that we've been doing this. But one of our favorite guests over the years, Bill Northey, who is the now on the staff of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, but he also farms in Iowa, and he was the director of agriculture for the state of Iowa. And so we always look forward to the opportunity to say hello. And with the Farm Progress Show being a virtual event out of Boone, Iowa this year, we thought it would be a good idea to have Max sit down with Bill and talk about the derecho of a couple of weeks ago and how you can watch the Farm Progress Show virtually. So let's bring Max and Bill Northey in. Max?
Both you and I have known Bill Northey for quite some time, Orion. He was a farm leader in his state. At one time, he was the president of the National Corn Growers Association. Then he was Secretary of Agriculture for the state of Iowa. And he currently is Under Secretary of Agriculture for the United States. He has a farming operation near Spirit Lake. And I talked with him this week about that damage that occurred now almost 2 weeks ago in that derecho that hit the state of Iowa.
I was looking at where your farm is located. Did you dodge the bullet on the derecho?
We really did. We were north. We're northwest Iowa, around Spirit Lake, Okoboji, and that was much farther north than the center of that storm. In fact, I think could still use a little bit of rain, like other parts of Iowa as well. But boy, some ugly pictures. And conversations with some folks from that area that got hit.
As a farmer yourself, you've dealt with down corn. How challenging is that?
You know, it depends how bad it is, but that's and in that kind of storm, there's all kinds of variation, right? There's a little bit that's just tipping. There's some that's two-thirds of the way down. That may crook back up again, but for those folks out there that understand corn's planted in rows, the row of that corn may be about 8 inches over or 6 inches over from where the actual row is. And that always makes it hard, and it tips and it flips. And then some of it's flat. And some of it's flat. And if it stays flat, you really have a challenge getting under it. It may be broken off as well. And in that case, some of it's laying there broken off, and some of it's maybe going ahead and maturing a little. So you have different maturities. And you have some stuff that just stops growing right now, and it was not ready to stop growing. So it's going to be light test weight, as well as potentially damage. They're just rots and other kinds of things, molds that can get into that corn as well when it's laying on the ground, stays wet, matures not normally. There's just a lot of things that can go wrong.
When will we know the extent of the damage in that crop? We certainly won't have a grasp on it even by the September crop report, will we?
We won't. We're doing some resurveying now within Iowa, I think, to try and understand what we know at this point. But we really won't know, as you suggest in your question, Max, until after harvest, because we won't know how extensive the best and the worst is and what the stuff in between is. I think we could go out there and probably within the next 15 days have a pretty good sense of how many zeros are out there as adjusters get around that area, and how much is going to be taken to harvest. But we don't know if it's taken to harvest, whether it's 60 bushel corn with 45 pound test weight, or whether it's 140 bushel corn that used to be 240 bushel corn, and maybe near normal test weight. And there'll be all those variations, sometimes within the same field. So let alone trying to figure out from county to county or parts of counties to parts of county.
We know facilities were badly damaged, too, in many instances, from hog facilities to dairy farm barns, grain storage facilities. Now, as a friend of mine pointed out to me the other day, routinely in a year, you'll see a lot of Iowa corn stored on the ground for a while. How big a deal is it, the loss of storage facilities for this corn crop?
You know, if that loss was scattered across the corn belt, it'd be one thing, but it's concentrated. It is, you know, within a dozen counties, within 35 counties, it's a lot, a good percentage of the storage. So for the folks in the middle of that, if they don't get storage back up, they're going to the ground or they're putting it on a truck and hauling it a ways. The other thing you've got to mention, the quality problems, is often you have a little bit of quality problem somewhere, but you have a lot of good corn to blend with that and make it extremely usable. In this case, we may have more of a concentration of quality problems, and some of that corn is going to be out there hunting for better corn to blend with someplace else to maintain as much value. So I think it's going to be a real problem. And then we took down bins. I think we're likely to see a soybean crop that is probably not normal, but near normal, because that crop will bend back over and stand back up, and maybe got whipped around and maybe it got hurt, but it's there. But that storage is gone. So even if you lost all the corn production on a farm and you say, well, I guess we don't have to store the corn and we don't have anything to store it in, we still have soybeans that need to go someplace as well. And in some cases, we'll have some corn. And in some cases, almost all that storage is gone. So I think it's going to be a real problem.
Good point. As a grower yourself, over the decades that you've been involved in agriculture and you've seen the challenges, you know so well right now that those Iowa farmers have battled several things. It's been a chain. What do you say to those farmers who say, you know, how do we keep going here? What's next?
Yeah, I think a lot of us thought it was really great to get out of 2019 and finally get to 2020. I used to say you could almost hear the ripping of that calendar in December of 2019, and now we're in 2020, and in some ways we've just had all kinds of challenges. Farmers know we have good years and bad years. We know we have great weather and poor weather. Some cases they had a really good crop coming, and it's really hard to lose it. We do have pieces that can help. We've got some crop insurance that can help pay part of the cost. Doesn't pay the potential, but it pays according to a percentage of your horse historical yield. We've got some programs that help. Those will bridge some folks, but you're right, it's right on top of some poor prices and some other challenges that producers were feeling. Producers are resilient, Even young producers. I talk to young producers that say, I'm just glad to get my worst year out of the way, okay? That's how optimistic and aggressive they can be. And almost everybody has something like this in their background. These folks got it this year.
Bill Norrie, the U.S. Undersecretary of Agriculture, Iowa farmer, as he pointed out up in that Spirit Lake area. Now, that was north, for the most part, north of the damage that that storm brought. Generally speaking, the damage was between U.S. 20 on the north and Interstate 80 on the south. And right in that band is U.S. 30. Where Boone is, where the Farm Progress Show site is, where the crops were standing in the field waiting to be harvested, and those crops were not hurt. They will still be harvested. For the Farm Progress virtual experience, that's right, since there's no Farm Progress Show this year, no Husker Harvest Day show out in Nebraska, the two shows, the demonstrations from those shows are being combined. And they'll be living on in the Farm Progress virtual experience, which goes live the 15th, 16th, and 17th of September. Now, it's being recorded, those field demonstrations. They recorded the forage equipment, the haying equipment working in the fields this past week out near Grand Island, Nebraska. They had a lot of haying equipment out there, windrowers and tedders and balers and rakes. And then the harvest equipment, the combines, will be recorded in just a few days, a little more than a week, at that site at Boone, Iowa. Combines and tractors, tillage tools, all of those images will be combined. I'll be describing the equipment as it works in the field for the Farm Progress virtual experience. Again, it goes live 15th, 16th, and 17th of September. And you'll be able to see it, producers, on the website HuskerHarvestDays.com or FarmProgressShow.com. And then if you don't catch it right immediately, even when it's live those 3 days, you can go back and take a look some other time. You can review something you've already seen, too, on those sites, HuskerHarvestDays.com, FarmProgressShow.com. Orion?
All right, Max. It's an unusual summer with State Fair. We'd normally be at the Illinois State Fair wrapping up this weekend, but that's not going to happen because of the COVID-19 situation. So you be careful out there and stay with us on WGN Radio as we keep you posted. And once again, that's our time here on the Saturday Morning Show. Our thanks to Bob Ferguson, the engineer, who turns the dials at the right time to make all of this happen. And as always, my thanks to you for joining us here on the Saturday Morning Show.